Good morning and welcome. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. 10 o'clock on Saturday morning means it is time for Final Draft. I'm Andrew Popel, and every week I love bringing you books, writing and literary culture. Today is no exception, although the show is something special, something different. I am going to be joined by a special guest from the 2SER podcast team. Nina Copel from History Lab is going to be joining me in the studio, and she's got a literary mystery that has come up in her research for an upcoming History Lab podcast episode. I'm intrigued by this. So Nina's been teasing this to me for a little while, and it has to do with a very prominent international organization, a very prominent Australian author, and the intersection between history and fiction. I can't wait to see what we're going to find out. That will be today's final draft. It is going to be happening after this short break, so please stick around for the mystery.
I am particularly interested in values, the values that we hold, and how we express those values. These, to me, are the vital questions.
7 decades of South Africa's history and people captured by one of the world's greatest photographers, David Goldblatt. Photographs, 1948 to 2018. A must-see exhibition at the Museum of Contemporary Art, Australia. Tickets, mca.com.au.
2SER sponsors.
You're tuned in to 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft, and my name is Andrew Popel. I'm joined today by Nina Copel from the 2SER podcast team.
Hi.
Hey, Nina. So Nina works on a show called History Lab, and it was while researching an upcoming episode exploring the formation of the League of Nations that Nina found an interesting link between history and fiction. So Nina, it was a few months ago when we actually first started talking about this, and look, I can't wait to hear more about what you've uncovered.
Yeah, so I think when we were talking, it was still early on in the research process, and I've learnt so much about all of this since then. But I think we should go back to where it all started.
Okay.
And the way that History Lab works, not always, but sometimes, is that historians come to us with pitches, with a story that they really want to tell. And in this case, it was a historian at Sydney University, Glenda Sluger. Mm-hmm. And she came to us with this idea to make an episode about the changing world order in the last century, which starts with the League of Nations.
I can see why you'd be interested in that, and there's a real contemporary resonance with what's going on, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, things are changing so much, and they have been this whole century, but yeah, I mean, I could go into the whole Brexit, changing the world, international order, losing faith in the international system, and that's a lot of what my History Labs episode is about, but I think the thing that captured my attention right from the get-go in her pitch was that she mentioned this woman, Edith Campbell Berry.
Interesting.
And as you know, and as we talked about, Edith Campbell Berry wasn't ever actually a real person.
No. She might be well known to many Australians for the reason you're about to tell me, but no, never an Edith Campbell Berry.
Yeah. So she is this fictional woman that came from a series by Frank Morehouse. But I didn't actually know this. So when I first read the pitch, I see this name, Edith Campbell Berry. And the first thing I started to do was Google her. And when you Google Edith Campbell Berry, you get these really prominent Australians come up who are talking about her. So Annabel Crabb, for example, has written in a Sydney Morning Herald piece that Australian literature is not, moreover, so fabulously replete with non-idiotic heroines that we could ever do without someone like Edith. So she has this really prestigious following. But journalists are one thing. It's the following from historians that really, to me, was surprising and really fascinating, to the point where you have a historian from Canberra, Dr. Lenore Coulthart, who actually talks about how Edith Campbell Berry completely changed the way she did her history. Because in the past, she would look at every single woman who went to the League, or she'd look at big bodies of big collections of people, or the whole group of women who went. And the Edith Campbell Berry story kind of made her stop and go, well, maybe I should be looking at one person. Maybe there's one story to tell. And she calls that the Edith effect. So with all of this information, I went back to Glenda Sluger, who's the historian who pitched this episode of History Lab. And I asked her, just to begin with, who is Edith Campbell Berry? In your mind, who is she? And this is what she said.
So Edith Campbell Berry was extraordinary. There was this place far across the seas called the League of Nations in Geneva She'd never been to Europe. I'm not sure she had ever left her hometown. But she got on a ship and off she went, like many other women, in search of the spirit of Geneva and also a job.
So for context, this is the interwar period.
Mm.
So you have a really strong kind of suffragette movement happening in the world, but it's also after the time of World War I when a lot of women got jobs during the war, when all the men went off to fight. But after the conflict had ended, you had a lot of men coming home, and those women were actually forced to leave their jobs again. And so that's kind of the context here of what we're talking about.
And what's really exciting about the story of Edith Campbell Berry is that she does represent the kind of optimism and enthusiasm for the League that one finds in, you know, a really large number of young women, some of whom were feminists and saw it as the answer to their political problems, others who saw it as an individual opportunity. And when they got there, they found themselves in positions where they had work. They felt they were doing something for the world. I don't know if every woman felt like that, but Edith Campbell Berry represents that young Australian, enthusiastic, fresh-faced girl in Geneva on an adventure, an extraordinary adventure.
So that's a historian talking.
This is extraordinary. Knowing what I know, though, I'm starting to put a few pieces into place, particularly this word that keeps coming up, and that's representing. I'm hearing searching in people's voices here and this need to find something that exemplifies a trend, a phenomenon. And Edith Campbell Berry came to be that representation.
And that's really interesting you say that, though, because there were real women who went. You know, there were women who went to the League, and there were Australian women who went to the League. So if you're looking for that representation, I mean, I think you can still find it in real women. And so why Edith? And I figured if I was going to get to the bottom of this, I had to ask the man who made her up. So I went to Frank.
I'm Frank Morehouse, and I'm the author of a trilogy set at the League of Nations, Grand Days, Dark Palace, and Cold Light.
And I took this opportunity to ask him what he thought about the Edith effect.
It's remarkable to me, and it has been remarkable to me, how almost every historian I've read in this space, Australian historian, looking at the League of Nations, mentions her in their academic analysis of this period in history. And it blows my mind. Does it blow your mind that she's become part of this history?
As Edith has.
Yeah.
there were some women, mainly in the public service or at the ANU, who had a plan to get Edith in the national a dictionary of Australian biography, which of course is for dead Australians that contributed to the public life of Australia. But they have been working on getting her listed, and I launched Anne Summers' memoir, and Edith is in the index of the book. Anne Summers found it very important book. A trilogy was very important in her thinking.
So that confirmed for me that this Edith effect is real, and Frank knows about it. But we kept on chatting, and Frank started to tell me the story of how he developed Edith as a character.
When I was in the archive working, I looked to see in the personnel files if there were Australians there. And there were one or two Australians who passed through the League. But eventually the Swedish archivist said there was a woman who was very interesting, but she was a Canadian, and name was Mary McGeechy. And he said, why don't you have a look at her, use her personnel file as a sort of basis for my character, Edith.
So Frank says that Mary McGeechy was really present in the archive. She wrote lots of memos. And even though she was a junior officer in the League, she used to comment a lot on other people's proposals when they came through.
And she went back to Canada, Mary McGuigan, and misrepresented herself. She promoted herself and got to talk to various organisations.
So I think if you've read the series, you can see how some of those things filtered into Edith and the character that she became.
I used my imagination to develop from the personnel file, the fat personnel file.
Okay, so this is my favourite part of the story that Frank tells about his journey, this creative journey. Are you ready for it?
I am chomping at the bit because this is so amazing. We are watching history and literature come to life in Frank's retelling here.
Yeah, okay, get ready for this part. This is a good part.
One of the most remarkable things that's happened in my writing life was that I was at a dinner party in France, and there were some Canadians there, and that, naturally people asked me what I was doing, and I told them what I was writing about. And I said, in fact, that I'm using a Canadian woman as a model, Mary McGeechy, and they said, oh, there were McGeechy family living in Ontario near us. And I said, oh. Then a month later or so, they wrote and said, you know that Mary McGeechy, you've been working using as a character, is alive. And I thought, no, that can't be right. That can't be right. And I rang the UN pension office.
So the UN pension office took over paying the League of Nations pensions when the League ended?
And they checked and got back to me and said, there's only one person from the League of Nations, they are still receiving a pension.
Guess who it was?
I'm going to say Mary McGeechy.
Good guess.
And the name's Mary McGeechy. And I then discovered from my Canadian connection that she was living in upstate New York. And I thought, that's incredible, incredible. And it's as though a fiction writer's fiction suddenly comes alive.
So Frank decided to go visit her.
I suppose I thought, have I got a problem here with defamation or whatever? But I decided that I would just go. I wouldn't write to the family, and they might say, oh, she's too old, too frail, her memory's gone or whatever. And I just had to see her. She was living with her adopted daughter. I told the adopted daughter what I was there for. She said, that's not my mother. My mother was, she's never mentioned the League of Nations. And I don't know, she said, I don't know what the League of Nations is. And I said, well, you go and ask her. And she did, and she said, no, you're right. Can you come back tomorrow? And I came back tomorrow and went into the bedroom. She'd broken her hip. And on the bed she had Le Monde, the French newspaper, and the Wall Street Journal, I think, was the other paper she had on her bed. She did have memory problems.
So Frank doesn't know exactly how old she actually is because the records show different dates. He thinks that she's lied at a few points about how old she actually was.
So we don't really know. She was obviously in her 90s, somewhere in her 90s. As I say, it was one of the most remarkable moments of my writing life. And here was a woman. I'd already virtually completed the book, and I had... And I knew all about her, and I brought a pile of photographs and other documents that she'd written. And I said I wanted to talk to her about the League. And she laughed and said, please, Mr. Morehouse, she said, I've forgotten so much. Please, please tell me all about my life and tell me all about the League. And it was a reversal of the interviewer.
So how crazy is this story?
This fascinates me on so many levels, and the one thing that I really found with what Frank just said about that interaction with 90-something-year-old Mary McGeechy is he talked about it, a reversal of the interview process. But this is really something that I think we poorly understand about the way we tell stories and the way we tell history. We're taught at school that there's this single story and this linear narrative, but all storytelling is a to-and-fro process. And we've all had that experience of sitting with someone and telling a story, and they've gone, oh, yes, wow, you know what, I had not thought of that until you mentioned it, and suddenly you go off on a tangent. That is how history is created in the first place and then told.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you add an extra dimension to that, which is imagination. And Frank has talked in the past about how the imagination is an archive. And when you add that element, so not only dealing with people's memories and the fragility of memory, but then imagination as a tool and as a historical tool, it has really interesting implications, doesn't it?
Oh, it really does. And I like that we're bringing this to people's attention, because that imagination has huge power to evoke. So something like Frank Morehouse's Edith trilogy, and if we want to think about the Edith phenomenon, just Google Frank Morehouse. And this is not the League of Nations trilogy. As important as that organization was, it's now the United Nations. It's the Edith trilogy.
Yeah, it is.
Sort of like if you you read The Lord of the Rings and then just decided to call it Sam's story.
Yeah, there's this kind of, I don't know how many of them there are, but there is a group of people on the internet who kind of follow the "what would Edith do" philosophy in life.
Oh, wow.
To take a different direction, because there's another interesting phenomenon that has emerged from this story and the Frank Mary McGeechy relationship, is that you already have the relationship between them, which is so fascinating. So it's a imaginator, if that's a word, a creative writer being inspired by a real woman and then kind of retelling her story. But there was another historian who kind of took inspiration from all of this.
A historian from the University in Winnipeg ultimately read my book and wrote and said, could I tell her about Mary McGeechy? And I sent her all my notes and all the photocopies of stuff. And the historian at Winnipeg wrote, I told her that there were papers in the house too.
So that's the roof of Mary McGeechy's house?
In the roof of the house, which I didn't get to look at. Things that you regret. And she wrote a biography of Mary McGeechy. So she becomes fiction, she becomes real, and has a biography.
But I still think there's a question here about why historians love Edith, because we can see how Mary McGeechy has a crazy, awesome story to tell. She's such a fascinating character and from such a fascinating time. But why Edith? So I put this question to Glenda Sluger, who's an international historian at Sydney University.
No, I think the interesting thing about the way that Frank Morehouse writes about the League is that he gives us a sense of a whole world around it. So the thing I always remember is the Molly Clubs.
So Molly Clubs, do you know what a Molly Club is?
But tell me, because I think I have a conception, but...
So in this era, in the League of Nations era, there were these clubs that were these underground spaces, especially known for kind of cross-dressing. So men would go wearing these amazing women's outfits, and it was this kind of safe space for them to socialize and drink. And if you've read the trilogy, Frank's trilogy, you'll know Edith was introduced to this world through Ambrose, who's another really important character and wonderful character in the books.
So Geneva, if you know Geneva as a town, it was a very conservative town, it probably still is. And so the underbelly of that town is kind of a hidden thing. But in the Frank Morehouse book, it becomes integrated into the story of the League of Nations and how people from different walks of life come together. Some historians have talked about how at the top echelons, you know, people imported fancy cars and pianos, and the high bourgeois life, if you like. But there was this other life, which was about the Molly Clubs. It was about sexuality and about diversity and being free as an individual in all sorts of ways. So here's this extraordinary international organization that's about planning and governance at a global level, however limited its scope is. But at a personal level, it's also about liberty, individual liberty, whether young women or even young men who are discovering their... otherwise unconventional, I suppose, sexual drives.
So Frank mentioned this as well, this kind of the social life of Geneva in the League of Nations era?
One, I wanted to know about the social life of young people in Geneva at the League, and I was being courteous and rather falsely careful of her modesty, if you like, but I wanted to know how what they got up to, and she understood what I was after, and she said, "Mr. Morehouse, I was not a naughty girl." And then she said, laughed and said, "Naughty girls are the best fun, and all my friends were naughty girls." And she kept saying, as I was telling her, she kept saying, "Oh yes, they were grand days."
So there's this element to the story that's really fun and social and exciting and really fun to read about as well. But there's also an element of the story that's actually just sad. And I wondered if this was an element that Frank brought up with Mary at all.
Surely I did. I can't remember asking her directly about the fact. Yes, she told me she was there for 13 years, and so were some of the others. She said some of them had nervous breakdowns, and two suicided of her group when the Second World War broke out. They'd failed, their life had been wasted.
So my conversation with Frank really became about what did the League of Nations mean in the context of the Second World War, which happened despite all their best efforts at maintaining peace.
Yes, Edith, or maybe it was Mary.
Okay, so right there we have this really interesting thing where even in the mind of Frank, Edith and Mary are starting to conflate. And I guess, one, that's a sign of a really well-drawn character. And the Edith effect shows us that. This is a fully drawn human being that people can identify with. And then for the author, Edith and Mary have become the same person, and they occupy a really important space. And I think we can start to approach the Edith effect when we consider what that person does for us and what we need from the story of the League of Nations. And I know it's going to be important for Frank and maybe for readers. It's incredibly important that we can move in a space that existed, but having a fictional person to move with gives us a certain freedom.
Yeah, and I think that we get that more and more from the story that Frank's telling us.
The League of Nations was really a school for the world to learn how to arrange itself on the planet. And obviously, we're still at school. We haven't found a way of arranging our lives on the planet. We can't even save the planet itself from the degradation.
And obviously he's talking about the UN as not necessarily a continuation of the League, but I think maybe he's referring to the continuation of the ideals of the League, which is the international spirit, and that's something that comes up a lot in the History Lab episode as well.
The UN, as I'll repeat myself, does a lot of good work. That it's the Security Council that's the problem, but I'm afraid that we're still at school. We're still learning how to run the planet. There may be another incredible disaster.
So this is something that Frank talks about in a really personal way, his feelings and his concerns about the world.
I'm emotionally affected by, at both the personal level in my own life, but also the international. I have an emotional engagement with the international politics. My doctor says I should stop taking the news. He said you'd feel better.
So is I guess, remembering the League an antidote to the news, if we're talking about the news as something that can be hard to take every day in the world that we live in, is imagining the League and what it stood for an antidote for you, for everyone maybe?
I was talking to, again, to my doctor, actually a psychiatrist, And I said that fiction, my fiction writing and lots of fiction is in medically referred pain at two levels, personal and political, but the creative work is not therapeutic. I had to correct him. I said, look at all the painters and writers and musicians who've produced good work and had dreadful personal life and have had alcohol problems and drug problems and there seems to be no evidence whatsoever that creative work is therapeutic. However, it's stabilizing and ultimately might make it controllable.
And yet I feel like from reading everything I've read about Edith and also reading Frank's books, there is something about this imagining or this reimagining of the League that is kind of inspirational.
Maybe your response goes some way to explaining the Edith effect. We read for so many different reasons. Even if we don't acknowledge them to ourselves, we read for entertainment, we read to explore ideas, we read for looking for answers. And Frank's really clearly told us there that the creation of Edith, the creation of the trilogy, was not therapeutic for him. Sometimes we have this myth that authors complete a work and they have all the answers to it. But the Edith effect allows us to go into a space, it allows us to go into a place, we can inhabit that and we can move around in it with the freedom that this is fiction and yet explore something historic. I don't know if we could do that with Mary McGeachy. She existed in a time and place and she lived. We can attribute thoughts and motivations to her in a way that with Edith we can move alongside her. I think your response is what many people find in Edith.
But also the fact that, for example, Glenda, when I was speaking to her, she was like, oh, but the Molly Clubs, you know, this underworld Geneva scene, this kind of sexual deviance that Edith has in a lot of ways, and she goes and she really adventures in that realm. And that's so, it's, you couldn't attribute that to a real person necessarily. I don't know that, you know, as Frank said, Mary McGeachy certainly didn't describe herself as a naughty girl, in his words. And that would be very limiting if you wanted to explore that world.
And again, we see the beauty of the Edith effect because we are free to journey with Edith into the Molly Clubs.
Actually, there's a kind of a sad anecdote that I've discovered through doing research about Edith. And that is one of the Australian women who actually went. Her name was Jocelyn Horn. And she was an Australian woman, a real Australian woman, who was hired at the League around the same time Edith would have been. And her story has some similarities. So the historian who did this research was Dr. Lenore Colfart from, she's a Canberra historian I mentioned at the beginning. And she says that from what we can tell, Jocelyn was very professional and quite competent. She had a professional role slightly lower down than Edith had in the books. But she was let go for, and I'm looking for the quote here. She was let go because of an excessive love of dancing.
Wow.
And it's just so funny that Edith gets away with this really kind of sexual adventure, this kind of rebellion against what the world expected from women at the time, in a way that this real Australian woman didn't. And when I read that, I kind of got shivers because it kind of brings you back to reality that there are some things that at that time were off limits. And the Edith story kind of lets you move beyond those limits in lots of ways.
The Edith effect is this perfect storm of history and culture and narrative that we can inhabit.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Nina, for coming in and helping us unravel the mystery of Edith Campbell Berry. If you want to find out more about Edith, about the League of Nations, you can check out the latest episode of History Lab that we'll be dropping this week. Just search for History Lab wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen back to our conversation today. Search for Final Draft. Great conversations. It's almost time for me to go. The Vulture's Nest is coming up. Thank you again to Nina. I'm Andrew Popel. I will be back next week with more books, writing, and literary culture on Final Draft. Bye now.